Okay, so he too is God, concealed in the mask of terror. So why does God assume this appearance? It is to bring out from within us all the strength that is needed to discover, to realize, to become the divine. So he assumes the mask to goad us. If you remember, there is a story of Parvati's tapasya. So when Parvati ji does tapasya, Shiva comes as a guru. And various things he tries, even asuras come. At critical moment, he is helping her. But he is not revealing himself. So this readiness to discover, because see, intellectually it's one thing to conceive that everything is divine. But it is far more difficult to realize it. So to realize it in its original sense, to realize that even not only behind the mask, even the mask is divine. This is the ultimate realization. Actually, this is a triple realization in the Isha, where you are quoting this verse from. The first verse, of course, is only Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam. All this is for the habitation of the Lord. But later, 6th and 7th or 7th and 8th will tell us that the divine dwells in all things. All things are in the divine and all things are the divine. So this is where we are talking of the ultimate. So the mask is worn so that the soul within us and our nature can become ready to face the Creator. It's not an easy task. It's like, to give just an example, if a parent has to train a child to, let's say, a wrestler father. We had a movie also like that. Yes. Dangal.
Yes.
So you see, in that movie, the father of the daughters has to train them very, very, in a very harsh way. So much so that they almost feel like running away. Even there is a song to that extent that you are, I don't like you. Hanikarak hai. But the point is that it is this that eventually prepares them to be the winners. So the divine assumes the mask of terror to bring out our highest strength. Imagine Ramayana without Ravan. Not that we should have Ravan around. That's not the logic of it. That we can come to. That should we always have it. Well, but imagine Ram's Ramatva. That in the Gita, Shri Krishna says that, you know, in Paurush, I am Ram. Now, if there is no Dandakaranya, if there is no Vanvas, if there is no Ravan, there is no Kumbhakaran, there is no Kardushan, then Ram is a very sweet chocolate hero. So this is a mask needed to make us grow. Now problem is, the mask can be so terrible that we may break down. So here comes the Indian thought that the journey is not a one life journey. So it is absolutely true that, if you look at it purely from one life perspective, it looks like a great tragedy. But if you look from the Vedantic perspective, the journey is going on through life and there is a constant forward movement. Unlike some of the modern neo-Vedantists who start, or maybe some people who start saying that, you know, Purvajanam and all this is a chakkar of reward and punishment. There is no retrogression in the whole theory of rebirth, except momentarily, which Sri Krishna speaks. But there also he says that retrogression, eventually when you begin to take God's name, you jump out of the inconscient. But otherwise there is no retrogression. So supposing in one life, one broke down, confronting evil. So next life, you are born with that innate strength. So this will be required, will go on, till man reaches that great destination of not only discovering, but uncovering the divinity within. Discovering is your personal thing. Uncovering is a collective thing. Because when you uncover the divinity, then the world benefits by it. So therefore, there is the mask of terror and evil. A necessary evil, if you want to put it.
And what about the concept of ahimsa? Like you have Yam Niyama.
Yeah.
So ahimsa. So ahimsa is not, you know, suffering the tragedy that the oppressor is doing.
No.
In Krishna, he says that, you have to go and...
Not fight. At all. Yes. So there is a Gandhian concept of ahimsa, which is external.
Yes.
But inwardly you may be boiling. But that's not how ahimsa is taken in the Indian thought. So it is ahimsa. It means there is no hinsa, is injury.
Yes.
And there in Indian thought, Indic thought, invariably it is the intent spirit which is important. Yes. Therefore, when Arjun fights the battle and does so-called hinsa, yes, it is considered as divine movement. And when the same thing is done by Duryodhan, it's a movement moved by dambha. So it is the inner state that Indian, if you want to put it, ancient dharma shastras, judiciary, has been so sensitive to. So you can fight a war, but you are fighting a war to defend your country. It's different from fighting a war to annex a country. You may fight a war for honor and justice, and you may fight a war with ambition, lust and greed. And it makes the difference. So ahimsa as a kind of doctrine, rigid doctrine that I'll not raise arms regardless of what you do, was never the Indian ideal. Even Buddha, the ultimate paragon of ahimsa is Buddha, not Gandhiji. So Buddha even went on to say that, you know, when there is a war thrust upon you, in just defense you can fight. That's what an Aryan was meant to be. So ahimsa is an inner state. So what it means is that there is no will to injury. There is no will to harm someone. There is no will to inflict pain and suffering on someone. But then, if you are pushed, not only protect yourself is not important. Much more important is the ideal. So people fight for a great ideal which gets distorted in whatever way, and ideal itself is distorted. But let's say the great ideal of love, or in Trojan War. In Trojan War, when very beautifully Shrivinda describes in Ilion, that at the end of the whole thing, before they fight the war, King Priam calls an assembly and he asks everybody, should we go to war or not? So everybody gives pros and cons. Then at the end he calls Helen. And he asks her only one thing. Do you still love my son? She says, yes. He says, then there will be war. Because you love him. And that love is something noble and sacred. So Mahabharata war. See, till the end there is an effort to stop it. Even Shri Krishna goes. Draupadi is standing up for honor and justice. Not just for a woman. But for womankind. So it's about honor. Disrobing a woman publicly, it's dishonor. It's this gross injustice by any standard. And who have been involved in it? Men like Bhishma, men like Drona, all of them who claim to be dharma shastris, and therefore they have to be fought on the battlefield. Even then Shri Krishna gives the offer. So war is a last option, and wars are fought largely for honor and justice, all the ideal wars in mankind. Of course, there is the aggressor against whom you have to stop. Say Alexander is aggressor. But to stop him, King Porus or Puru, he stands up. So that's honor and justice. Rana Pratap and Shivaji stands up for honor and justice. So wars are fought actually for ideals. In everyday life, yes, personal survival, it's absolutely true. It is known as, you know, even Indian judiciary or any judiciary, if you have killed somebody in self-defense, it's considered as right, but in military. So this Gandhian ahimsa had a different logic to it. The logic which Mahatma Gandhi had was a shrewd politician, apart from other things. So when he confronted the British, now what happens, Britishers are those who like to show that they are very conscientious people. It's not that they are. They were at bottom businessmen. Yes. But they don't like to be painted as black. Yes. So when you don't take up arms, it puts them on a spot. What do we do next? It's a different thing that they learned to manipulate. They were very cunning. Yes. So they used him. They started using him because they are very cunning. You can't. But the ploy was that if we don't lift up arms, Britishers are likely to somewhere begin to feel morally wrong. But this is not so with Hitler. This is not so with Chinese. So ahimsa as a temporary strategy was adopted by Gandhiji, knowing the British psychology. But when he made it a ideal for the nation, it was a big danger. You can't say Nohakali I am going to face with ahimsa. You know what was going to happen. But for the intervention of, or the inspiration of, Hitler, we all know what would have happened if people would not have fought. So that strategy of Gandhian ahimsa is a strategy.
So how do we balance this? There is an aggressor against us, and then we know that everything is divine. So
Yes, so, okay, so divine part. Okay, yes. Now we take it like that, that there are two ways of looking at it. Who is an aggressor? He is aggressing because he believes might is right, like Bali.
Yes.
He doesn't believe in any rule or norm. He says that by birth, I am Indra's foster child, therefore I claim, and he has got magical powers. He says, well, I can't help it. God has given me magical powers, therefore I must rule. So, there is a truth in that. So, divine in the manifestation always keeps moving from lesser truth to greater truth. But now a greater truth is going to come, which is Rama. So, Ram is might, but a might which is restrained. Maryada Purushottam. So, Bali must fall. So, similarly, like when a child is there, a child has a certain dharma. And it is okay for a child to, you know, sometimes in a fit of anger, 3-year-old child hits the mother and says, you are a useless mommy and dad, you go away. But if the same child does it at 20, then it's a serious issue. So, humanity as a collectivity also moves from its infancy to childhood, to adolescence, to adulthood. It's a collective march. That's what Shri Krishna says. So, there is a time when things of a certain kind manifested because they were necessary. Extreme aggression, heroes, you know, who could threaten even gods. Because humanity had to wake up to titanic powers, titanic forces. It was needed because, you know, matter, material, if you just tell him ki tu paan bidi kaake soja, to wo nahi. So it had to wake up to, that's why the titan wakes up first. Titans are called as elder brothers. After the titans, when titans have done their job of waking up, shaking up, then the gods come. It's like Balaram sowing the field. Then Krishna coming and playing the flute. So, sowing the seeds of light. So, he ploughs the field. So, titan ploughs the field. Therefore, they are the elder brothers. So, there is a time given to the titan, which includes Ravan, was given a time. Divine has given him the time. Divine has become the titan. Because that's the time when all this churning is going on. If you look at Parshuram, he himself will appear as if he is a titan. But, you know, that's how the churning goes on until something greater has to come. Now, when something greater has to come, this must go. So, that is one logic of, you know, everything is divine, but in the manifestation, we are moving from a lesser divine to a greater divine. Even today, our humanity is not the last, something still greater will come. So, this is one way one has to look at it. The second way, which is more practical, because this is okay, this intellectuality is satisfying, but how do I make out? So, there I have to go by, okay, you are opposing me and challenging me, for whatever reason, it doesn't matter. But what am I feeling deep inside, inspired by? That's why the Gita uses the word swadharma. It doesn't use the word that intellectually you analyze and see whether you should do it or not do it. Because then the mind will give equal reasons for hitting, against the oppressor, standing up or not standing up. Gandhiji himself gave strange reasons that if you stand up against, it will create more hatred and all. But, you know, it doesn't stop. So, it will equally give equal reasons that, well, that is for later. Right now, people will be killed and trampled. But what is the Swadharma? So, this war was largely for the Kshatriya kind. Now, Kshatriya is not by birth. Even today, in humanity, there are those who, in the face of war, will say, Hame kya lena dena? Okay? So, they are never meant to. They will, whatever philosophy you may give them, they will ultimately wait. And they will ultimately make profit in every age. There were Mughal rulers, there were people, Vaishyas, who were going both ways and taking money.
Yes.
But there were Brahmins who were, guiding the society. They were not actually engaging in war, except very few. What was his name? Chanakya. He was preparing a Chandragupta. But there is a Kshatriya impulse in man, Swadharma, which feels deeply moved by injustice. And it must stand up and fight. So that is God's arrangement. And he must fight because that is his earth. If he doesn't do it, paradharma bhayavaha. Then, you know, swadharma nidhanam shreya. So there is the practical part. That see what you feel inside as your dharma at that moment. And dharma by its very nature implies your personal safety, your personal gains are not to be considered. Then you feel inspired. You may die in the battlefield, yet you go. You may suffer a loss, yet you fight. So, one has to feel this dharma inside the heart. So, both ways you can tackle it.
So, in Gita it says that there are three things that lead you to hell.
Yes.
One is lust, second is anger, third is greed. Talking about lust, Sri Krishna himself says that Asmi Kama Dukh.
Haan.
About greed, he says, Dyutam
Chalayatma Masmi. Haan. Yes, yes.
Right? And Dhananjaya, Pandav me mein Dhananjaya hun. Dhananjaya means who has won the wealth. And in go to Shiv Puran, so he says that in Bhagavat also it is written that when Sati, the Bhirgurishi was performing the marriage and he said that she will not marry Janak, Daksh Prajapati was there. So he took a beard of
his. Veerabhadra comes.
So Krodha Rudra Samutpanna. So there are these three things lead you to hell.
Yes.
And then these three things also have the divine manifestation.
So basically, there is a...
divine and not so divine?
And there are many, many stories. Parashar Rishi, which, you know, is a classic example. Parashar Rishi, you know, joins... they have a conjugal relation without marriage.
Yes.
With Satyavati.
Yes.
And what is the progeny? Vyas.
Yes.
Who is the... So basically, when Shri Krishna speaks about it, no doubt about it, that Kama, Krodha, Moha, fear, bhayam, all these lead to hell. So, in origin, every movement will have its divine origin. There cannot be a movement here which is de novo. It's like saying there are two origins. That there is one which is divine, there is other undivine. But in the last limit, you have to reconcile the two. You cannot have that there are one divine which will forever be, one undivine which will forever be. So even what we see undivine is ultimately owes its origin to the divine. So we are touching the same problem now with another way. So there is the Vidyamai Maya and Avidyamai Maya. That's how it is said. In Vidyamai Maya, you know the oneness. And in Avidyamai, there is division we have forgotten. So man is, when he is in Avidya, when he is living by division, then you tell him, you know what, lust is bad. So what becomes? He becomes a neurotic, average person. So what do you say? You say ki, of course, the desire which is, or kama which is one with dharma has a very high meaning, but I'll come to first the, that's what Shri Krishna says. So, but I'll come to its more commonplace meaning. The commonplace meaning is that, well, it's okay, you have married someone, or let's make it more general, you love someone and you have an experience of lust, it's fine. But when you try to covet or possess somebody, it's like loving your own partner in today's context, I am not using the word wife, is fine. But lusting after your neighbor's wife is not fine. So this is what? This is a stage of evolution of mankind. But when it evolves beyond that point, then lust completely goes away. In the sense, you can't just tell lust that, okay, it's bad for me, I go away. So that's why in the Gita, Shri Krishna says, first the rajotamogun. It says the origin of sin is rajogun. So, how do you climb to a Trigunatit? You first use the Sattugun. That's the chapter 7. By putting in the Sattugun, you are now slowly modifying the Rajogun. You are putting it in a format according to the Shastra, according to the Dharma. Now, of course, even there, because the door is open, there may be a fall. But you are observing restraint. All the great yogis, Sri Krishna himself had a child for that matter. But there comes a time. Now, where is lust come in? Lust comes in when there is, even in a personal relationship, where there is a will to possess. So, magridha kasya svidhanam. I am talking of a still an elementary level. There is a very deep meaning of, you know, the kama, which is origin in God. But first we'll come to just a very simple level. Let's say a woman says no, but she is your partner, she is your wife. Now, where does lust come in? Lust is when you cross that boundary. You say you are, it's your duty. It's Shastra justifies it. But today, we know humanity has evolved to a point where it says no means no. If a woman says no, that's the end of the story. So that's where now humanity is being fine-tuned to this higher ideal that you have to at some point go beyond the Shastra and feel within. So love, even lust, or let's say a physical relationship can be beautiful, provided, as today they would say, there is a consent, there is not just the animal thing active, but something which is higher, more beautiful, that more divine. If you read through the, Kama Sutras or of Vatsyayan, you see that they are trying to lift it to what levels. But still that is within the human range. You can be uplifted to a high humanity by observing these things and, you know, in Indian thought, even for kama, just that you take a bath, a ritual bath, proper this thing, time, everything had to be considered. That's why Kaikashi, when she wants to have a child through her husband's name, I'm forgetting, one of the rishis. So he said, no, it is not the right time because this is evening. If you have it at this point of time, but she is moved by passion. So he says the child will be a very dangerous thing. So everything, time, place, everything had to be considered. So to that extent, yes, this lust will not degrade you, but you will master the power of lust to that extent because you have learned to observe sanyama. That's where the Patanjali comes. Yama, niyama, sanyama. So you learn sanyama. Sanyama prepares you. So you have the, four purusharthas where you have earth, kama. Then you are ready for dharma and moksha. I mean, dharma comes first, but you are ready for moksha. But otherwise, if you ask a person to jump from that animal stage to the divine, he cannot. So that's where kama comes. That same thing comes with krodha. Go beyond krodha. But you will see in the Mahabharata itself, Arjun gets into krodha, Drishtadyumna gets into krodha, everybody seems to get into krodha.
Krishna gets into
that's the way it is described. Why? Because when Arjun is in threat, that's the time. There are two, three times when he is shown it. So there we can talk about motive, but it is krodha as it is described. So there we have to understand that here the energy of krodha is being uplifted. You are not becoming krodh just because, a desire has not been fulfilled, because something has not been satisfied, the usual reasons for krodh. But a krodh which is free of moha, it is something again, for something which is divine, it is being destroyed. Somna temple is being destroyed. So at that point of time, krodh becomes an agni, krodh agni, Draupadi is in krodh. And that krodh demolishes the whole Kuru empire. So as a stage of evolution, kam, krodh, even more, before people can learn to love, they must at least have a proper attachment, sneha, snehasik. You tell a person that, really speaking, attachment is not good. What will a person do? He'll live like an animal. He'll go impregnate, go away. Well, I'm not attached to you. Now imagine the situation. So the snigdhita that comes in feelings, mamatva that comes, all these. So this is about a sattvic stage, we can understand. Then you can take it to the next level. Next level is everything owes its energy in the divine. But in divine, it is transmuted. So when Shiva manifests Virbhadra, what is it against? It's not about his wife's death. If you really look the story, what has happened? Shiva is not invited in that yajna. So basically, Prajapati, who is conducting the affairs of this world, he is the Prajapati. So, he has formatted a world into certain rules, regulations, which everybody should follow. But in that rules and regulations, a person who is inwardly really free in the highest sense has no place. Eternal has no place because even God has to follow certain rules and regulations. Otherwise, there is no place. Now, basically, if you have to put it in modern context, see, we all will revere a sannyasi. But if our son says, I want to become a sannyasi, because we don't have a place. Yes. Sannyasi has no place in society. Yes. That's why he is outside.
Yes.
Even in Kumbh, somebody, not that I am a favorite of sannyasi, I don't follow that path, mine is a different path. Yes. But still, when a person asked a Naga sannyasi, why you people are staying away, hidden, why don't you come and teach us? He says, let somebody call us, we'll come. Now his answer is very valid. People are afraid of sannyasis. So sannyasi has no place because he lives in freedom. That is also true. Sannyasi doesn't follow any format true sannyasi, rare of them. So you go beyond format. Shiva is beyond format. So he's afraid of somebody beyond format. Okay, till then Shiva says, okay, fine, it's something personal. Who is Sati? Sati is the divine mother who has become Avidyamai Maya so that she can, she is Avidyamai. There are reasons and Parvati is Vidyamai. So, but what is the effort to bridge that Avidyamai nature with the eternal? That's her effort. So she goes. She goes, not just doing Avhilna. She still feels that maybe Daksh Prajapati and his kingdom by doing this, like a woman tries to change the, parents' mindset, her parent, that no, your son-in-law is not that bad as you think. So she tries. And when she tries, now this is the divine mother who has become this nature. Nature is trying that, whoever are the guardians and formatures and the prajapatis, that no, you have to allow access to something greater. And in that fit, he says no. And then she plunges into the fire. Now, Shiva's reaction is against a world which is not ready to receive the divine. It's better goes away. So that mass scale destruction that you see, which even Vishnu the preserver cannot stop, is basically to destroy a world which has lost its way, which cannot allow for evolution, because Daksha Prajapati is a closed system. It doesn't allow for evolution. It doesn't allow for expansion. Therefore, that world is destroyed. Now, we describe in our human language, even Shri Krishna, krodh agya. Ab wo krodh nahi hai. Wo ek avesh hai. That's, you know, that's a divine movement which has its grandiosity. So when Shiva dances and worlds collapse, so there is a grandiose surge in that. It's not about, oh, my wife, poor lady, you know, she went and they have done this to her. So how dare?
Revenge.
It's not, there is no revenge in it. There is none of these things. They have been doing, Daksha has been doing this all the time to Shiva. Shiva accepts it. But here it's about a world which discards not only the divine, but the divine mother's energy, which is even behind this nature, doesn't listen to that. It's like a world which, mental world, imagine a world which is run by AI, which shuts the divine and spiritual seeking outside. What is going to be its fate? Now somebody has to do that work. Shiva does that job because it's his job, assignment as a god to destroy whatever is not ready to receive the divine. But in human language, because we don't know Avesh, we don't know all these movements, we describe it as divine movement. So when a man becomes divine, he may be moved by these kind of very high and mighty passions. The will to change the world, you know, mighty passion. Lord Rama, Parshuram for that matter. Parshuram is not, he's not blindly just taking revenge against Kartavirya. Kartavirya finishes. But now what does he say? He says, Kshatriyas who are not following, they become arrogant. If it was revenge, it should have been done with Kartavirya.
Yes.
No? He destroys 21 times. Still he finds Rama. Rama is a Kshatriya, but a noble one. So we have to look at it in that sense. The movements of divine proportion, godlike proportions, are very different from human movements. Though they may look like that, and of course, human movements are degradation of that. No doubt about it. For instance, Ishwara and Ishwari. Every divine has a consort.
Yes.
Okay. So, but is
I
that... Yes. All of them. Krishna and Radha. Now, is it lust the way we experience? No, that's where comes the difference. But lust is a degradation of that. So, there are two ways of looking at these two things. That one is the Freudian, the dark end you catch and describe the bright by that basis. That, well, all love is nothing but lust, which is hiding behind a mask. This is how average person is a pyar vyar kuch nahi hota hai. Ye sab kaam vasna hai, tum pyar ka mukh hata de rahe ho. But if you see from the higher standpoint, lust is a degradation of love. So lust is the first step. Human beings cannot learn love unless they go through this attraction, repulsion. After many things, they wake up to an ideal of something more charming, more beautiful, higher. Then they go to divine love. And then they, when they have the relation, then it is like Sati or Parvati and Shiva having children.
What about so, greed? The divinity and not so divine?
Absolutely. If you look at greed, divine wants the whole world. But what does he want it for? Greed in the human manifestation is for personal purposes. The story of Ram is... So there is the concept of Ashwamedh Yajna. So if you look at it, Ashwamedh Yajna and empire building. This is the fundamental difference. Ashwamedh Yajna, if you see the first Ashwamedh Yajna and the story in Sanatana Dharma, that's where King Bharat, not of Mahabharata, there are two different versions, but anyways, he is Bharat by name, after which the nation derives its name. So he holds Ashwamedh Yajna and Vasishtha Rishi is there, and the 10 kings whom he has won, Das Rajane, they come together and they decide what will be our terms and conditions. So the terms and conditions are whatever we, any of the kingdom discovers, it will share with all. So Ashwamedh Yajna was a means of sharing, yes, dharma sthapna, to It's not a buzzer. It was not a brutal killing, cultural imposition, or you know, looting. But if you look at it from one point of view, there are people who say that ancient kings also used to annex. Lord Rama also went, but look at the difference. Lord Rama conquers Kishkindha. Conquered means Bali is the one, so he should be the king.
Yes.
But he installs there Sugriv. He conquers down south Lanka, but whom does he install there? Vibhishan. So, but they all accept Lord Rama's, in a way, hegemony or empire.
Yes.
Because he, now why is he doing all this? To establish Rama Rajya. But on the other hand, he is easy, quick to renounce his own kingdom. So it may look like greed, but what is the origin of greed? That everything in this world for should be for the sake of the divine. So that's where you have this phrase that Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam Yat Kincha Jagatyam Jagat. But outwardly it is not. If you really look at it, where is Isha? Isha is hidden.
Yes.
But it should be for the Isha, but it is not for. It is for Anisha. So there are individuals who have to learn to renounce. And when they renounce and they bring things for the sake of the divine work, say people who ask money for a genuine divine work, like Matri Mandir. So what is it? He may say, if somebody tells him that, should I give you 1 crore, 2 crore? He may say, as much as you wish to. But he's wanting it for a different purpose. So greed also has its origin. All. Even bhay, which is the worst kind of impurity. So divine who gives abhaya, he's bhayankara. Kali or Krishna, Vishrup. From there, degradation is bhay. So how is bhay comes in? Bhay comes in when we see that mightiness, that grandeur, that splendor, that vastness of the divine. The little ego feels, I am going to vanish.
Yes.
So it is bhay.
Yes.
So it hides in a, you know, little hole. So even bhay, which is the darkest, which goes more than the shadripus, bhay is falsehood. So even one can raise, where does mithyatva comes in? Falsehood comes in. So falsehood is, doesn't have an independent origin. Nothing can have an independent origin. Falsehood is distortion of the divine, of the truth. So it imitates the truth it denies. So Ravan says, I am the, not only I am Triloka Adhipati, all the gods I command, therefore I am God. Hiranyakashyap says, I am God by his mightiness. So that's where even falsehood is a distortion of a profound truth. But when the divine says, well, I am the Lord and he sometimes has to manifest his omnipotence. So what is it? It is truth. It's a movement of truth. So all inferior movements are, that's the whole basis of yoga of transformation. That you don't have to leave this, you have to transform this.
Then comes the pain. When everything is pervaded by the Lord, then what are you being asked to renounce?
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's
what
true.
We renounce?
There is nothing to renounce. We have to change the, we have to reorient ourselves. There is nothing to be. That's why I made a passing comment that sannyas is not the ideal of humanity. It can be some person, because everything has its own place. So there are people who need to go away. Rather, if you see the Isha Upanishad, it says that if you are, you have to, tato na vichugupsate. So what is a sannyasi doing? He has jugupsa. He may eat meat, saying that I have no jugupsa. But he has jugupsa of the world. He has jugupsa of the contact of worldly life. Swami Vivekananda's famous story, where he goes to, I am forgetting the king, probably king in Gujarat, where a courtesan begins to dance and he goes away that, you know, I am a sannyasi yogi, I am not going to watch this. And then she sings, Prabhuji More Avguna Chitna Dharo, Samadarshi Hai Naam Tiharo. And then she says that Paras Guna Avguna, Ek Loha, Surdas Ka Pad Hai, Ek Loha Puja Me Rakhat, Ek Ghar Badhik Padho, Paras Guna Avguna Nahi Dekhat, Kanchan Karat Kharo. That if you are truly above this, you can be in the midst of anything and everything. That is the ideal state. But till man is ready, maybe as a temporary phase, he needs to probably withdraw. It may be a schooling, but cannot be the final. So all those who say ultimately drop karma and go away from the world, they at the end give a lie to the world. Giving a lie to the world is actually giving a lie to the Lord. Because whatever it be, the world has not suddenly sprung up. Even the sense of illusion. Illusion has two meanings. The distortion part is correct. But the other is that non-existent. Somewhere, somebody did something and the soul is an illusion. So that means the divine was playing a trick, and a very bad trick. So it can be a stage, and for some people it can be a path, because you need strength to meet the challenges of this world. But then when you meet the challenges, you grow towards the omnipotence of the divine, not otherwise.
There is nothing to renounce.
Nothing, nothing. Renunciation has to be inner. I mean inner. By renunciation, I mean nothing external. Inner renunciation is the same thing. Your ego has to be renounced, desire has to be renounced, but you cannot do it straight away. So convert the rajasic, rajotamsic, or the deva, devasuri sampada, if you say. But basically, rajotamoguni ego and rajotamoguni desires have to be first renounced in favor of the sattva gun, or rajosattva, ego and desire. Then you have to renounce even the sattva gun and go beyond. So then when you are beyond, rules don't apply on you. You can destroy, but inwardly it's a divine movement.
Now let's combine these three. Ten taktena bhunjitha.
Yeah.
Ten is renunciation and bhunjitha is pleasure and
enjoyment. Yeah, yeah.
So the coexistence of these two.
Actually,
how do pleasure, renunciation and pleasure coexist? How can we truly find enjoyment? By renouncing.
Yeah.
Renunciation usually associated with giving up pleasure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, for this renunciation and enjoyment reconciling, I have a very commonplace example. I'll first say that. See, you go to a place to visit. You are enjoying the scenery. You are enjoying, this is so lovely. Then you suddenly see something and you want to own it. You want to buy it. Now the cost consideration comes in. Now, that's the first step where you have opened a door. Two problems. But let's say you buy it. Now when you buy it, then comes the fear of losing it. Or if it gets spoiled.
Maintenance,
which is required. Others appreciating it. Now what has happened? You have bought not just an object, but you have bought all kinds of worries. How long will you really enjoy it? That's a big question mark. People take photographs. Okay, but that moment is gone.
Yes.
You are showing to people. You may live a memory for a moment, but that beauty of that pristine moment is over. But people do it. So, tene taktene bhunjita is even at everyday life. You go to a market, the moment you want, you see, what a lovely sari, lovely dress. Now you want to buy it. Now things change. As if you are going to buy and feel that same joy. You are not going to feel that same joy. You will forget it. Next moment you are, rather you may be careful.
Familiarity
breeds ganda na ho jaye. Agle ne bol diya ye kahan se liya hai, Sarojini market se liya hai kya. So then you feel he doesn't have kadr for my things. So that's why even in everyday life, true enjoyment is when you are not wanting to possess it. That's why the gridha part comes. When divine gives you something, the practical side is enjoy it by all means. He gives you luxury. That's what Meera says. Karna fakiri fir kya dillegiri sada magan mein rehna ji kaho to motiyan mang jadawa kaho chitkara kesh ek din bhumi par sona ek din rajbhavan mein. So basically it means that you have to be atmarati. That's the beauty. And atmarati doesn't need to externally leave things. He's getting such a joy and delight in the divine. You put him on a 5-star hotel or the most luxurious place, he is equally comfortable there. That's why the Gita insists on equanimity. But if you put him on a floor to sleep, he is equally comfortable there. He is not, oh my God, I am missing my bed. This is a real state. Yogis should be that. A yogi who says, no, I will always sleep on the mat. So that means he is somewhere, he will probably not get a good sleep on a good mattress. That's not a good state. I mean, it's not an integral state. But look at Shri Krishna. He is on the battlefield. He is on the in Dwarkadhish. He is taking away a whole, village or a kingdom to the western coast, and re-establishing it. He is the same. This equanimity is required.
Samatvam
yoguchate. So this external renunciation, this but again, as you said, the possession, this is my mattress, this is a problem. This is my house, there is a problem. But I have been given a house, or I have bought a house with whatever money I have earned. You make it as beautiful as you should. It's a temple. But tomorrow, if you have to go away, you walk away. That's what we see in the ideal of Rama. See, the problem is we forgot the two great ideals, Rama and Krishna. So Ram, when he has to leave the kingdom, Lakshman tries to tell him, you are doing a wrong thing. He says, it's a mother, Kekai, and our dad, you must stand up and fight for justice. Ram says, no. Because this is the lineage he follows. But when he comes back, does he say, no, now I become a sannyasi? He takes the kingdom, conducts it. He doesn't say, no, Bharat, you continue. I mean, passingly it is shown somewhere. He doesn't say continue. That he doesn't say. He says that, okay, now he takes the kingdom and now his goal is Ram Rajya. So one has to be equal-minded. That's what it means. It doesn't mean that you have to renounce me, externally leave it. If I get into a palace, I'll say, no, I am supposed to I'll enjoy only if I renounce the palace. I'll stand in the sun on one leg, then I will enjoy. This is foolishness. Or I must get a greater enjoyment, therefore I must leave this.
Yes.
No, you will get the greater joy if you are Atmarati. But this is not important. But that's what.
What, like tektain and bhunjita, like two opposites.
Yes.
Renunciation and pleasure.
Yes, that's what. So that's the joy. So in like, fact, the
there
joy.
Is sweets. There is sweet, I am enjoying it. But how will I, if I do tektain, how will I do bhunjita?
Here tektain is that, you know, you want the sweet, there is a craving. You love the sweet. I have a very personal take on this because I have a sweet problem, sugar problem. But I eat sweets. Now what used to happen was, invariably, people used to give sweets. And they would give sweets. I would take it as a prasad. And it lie in my fridge. Now, I have never gone out and bought sweets for myself. Never. I want to have this sweet. I must go and buy sweet. But if somebody gives sweets, I keep it. Now I share it also. But I also take my own little bit. Now, but if I don't get sweet, if I become disturbed, if I develop the craving, then there is a problem. So one has to know the difference. You may love a sweet very much. Somebody is going to Bombay and you tell them,
basically,
you know.
If you want to reconcile the two, tektain and bhunjita, it means stop craving, but do not be too rigid that you won't enjoy if it is given.
That's one. Most importantly, it is not your life should be object independent. It's not about object that is it is being spoken of. This is about the subject. So how is the subject connecting himself to sweet? Somebody gives me sweet, I relish it and I taking the joy of the taste. Somebody has put a, you know, effort into it, and if you go by the Gita's definition of it, is Brahman which has manifested itself. Why not? But equally, tomorrow I may go to a place where I may get khichdi 3 days or 5 days. I am equally happy with that. It has its own taste. Shobindu, who would love, you know, Pantua at one time, but he never had. One of the time when Champak Lalji says that, would you have Pantua? And he says, oh, if it's Pantua, I will, I won't mind it. But the same Shobindu one day had a dish which didn't have salt. He took it. Now, disciples used to take as prasad afterwards. He used to take very little anyways. Usually it would be just one meal or usually. So, when the disciple tasted, he discovered there is no salt. He said, sir, but there is no salt in it. You never said. He said, no, there is a joy of salt, taste of saltlessness. So, there is a joy of everything. So, bhunjita, it's you are enjoying. It's not just indifference. You take a delight in it. When the sweet comes, you take delight in that. When another thing comes, you take a delight. When it is taken away, you are still in a state of delight. Why? Because Magrida Kasvidhanam. You don't want to possess anything. When things come, that was the idea of training of bhikshus, which got later on distorted. In Buddha's bhikshu, order of bhikshus, and many people do follow that. Well, I'll go to one house, I'll ask one house, whatever they give, I have to be satisfied with that. But that is an external method. You can still live with the same attitude.
Same continuation to it, like in a world where ambition and external success is held to high standards, how could the idea of enjoying by letting go actually lead to more satisfaction in our daily life? Is it even relevant? And can you think of an example?
Very much. See, that's what I'm saying. Enjoy, if you look at, analyze it. So what enjoys? Do the senses enjoy or the mind enjoys?
Ego enjoys. ego. Fulfillment of ego or senses?
Senses with the mind. That's why mind is supposed to be rasagrahana. It is the sixth indriya. So mind enjoys it. And the example is condition the mind to pasta. It will enjoy pasta. It will enjoy fish. Condition the mind to not fish but rasagulla. It will enjoy rasagulla and not fish. So it is the mind which is conditions the senses to enjoy. Mind is the rasagrahan. So when the mind turns towards the divine, so that's why it is called as param drashtva. He begins to take rasa in the Lord. So then what happens when you give him something, or let's say he is in a job. So his delight is not lessened or increased by his promotion. When he gets a promotion, he is happy. And he is going to use that opportunity to serve the divine. When he doesn't get the promotion, he is happy. So his joy is independent of the object. That's what it means. So he is enjoying it, but not enjoying it. Oh, so nice, I got a promotion, I'll get more money, more package. That will not be there. I mean, I know this. See, whole of Air Force, I'm just giving this as a personal example because you are closest to your own, challenges you have gone through. I didn't know my pay. 20 years and a half, I took premature retirement. I was asking at 9, 14, 18. I didn't get. At mother's grace that when I got minimum pension, I got the retirement. That's a different story. I never knew my pay till the end. People used to say you have to save income tax, that. I said, kat jata hai, maa bharti ko ja raha hai. Kat raha hai, wo kiske income tax, when you cut raha hai, to kiske paas ja raha hai? Mother India ke paas ja raha hai. बोले नहीं पॉलिटिशियन ये करेंगे वो करेंगे. आई सेड ये उनका कर्म है, मेरा कर्म नहीं है. मैं क्यों इतना वो करूं? तो जो आ रहा है उसमें आप खुश हो तो अच्छे से चला. और अभी तक ऐसे है. तो व्हाट यू नीड द डिवाइन विल गिव यू. व्हेन ही गिव्स यू डोंट हैव टू शन इट. सो ये जो प्रवृत्ति आ गई नहीं 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 मैं शन करूंगा, नहीं. इफ समबडी गिव्स यू, रिसीव इट विद ओपन आर्म. बट ऑलवेज रिमेंबर यू आर ए ट्रस्टी, यू आर नॉट ए पजेसर. Custodian. Somebody gives you 1 crore rupees. I'm just giving an example. Oh, wow. Somebody has acknowledged me or my knowledge or wisdom and has given me money. Now I can enjoy. Now I can take a business class ticket and go to America. No, that's where you are fooling yourself. Can I use it to the best use? The best use, understanding will differ. God inspired? Yes. So, you have it, the means that come from nature, it may come in your job, anything, you take it and you use it. But where does ambition come? I must be better than the other person. Obviously, that is, that person got 2 lakhs, I must get a package of 4 lakhs. That is obviously ambition. I am struggling, I am doing more job, and see, I am not being rewarded. All these are ignorance and delusion, as the Gita would call it at some point. So I should not be like that. But what I am giving, I should be a custodian. Use it rightly, wisely. Simple example. You are taking all the trouble, coming, all this, with the mobile, then you are uploading, you have your own team. You need money for that, isn't it? So if you say, I am going to renounce everything externally, then basically this beautiful work, which actually in a certain sense is a divine work, now you are coming in the way of it. So, whatever. But equally, if you get troubled, promotion chahiye or paisa chahiye, then there is a problem. Whatever means divine gives, receive it as coming from the divine, regardless of the person from where you are getting it. Use it divinely, and if it stops coming or goes, so be it.
So, if you, then last part of this is like, Ma gridha kasya svidhanam. It has multiple interpretation, but let's not get into this. Simple question is, if we make money, we can sustain ourselves, perform rituals and acts of service and raise children. Dharmasya mulam artha chanakya said. When we die, we leave it for our family.
I am just saying that for family to ego agya na.
But this is a common...
I know it. I am just saying that I am aware of this interpretation.
Yes.
But I am just saying ultimately, okay, I leave it for my family. It's still the ego. You can leave it, but don't quote the Isha for this. Say that, well, I am attached to the family. Nothing wrong with that. As I said, it's a sattvic desire than throwing away just like that. orphanages and all, that's probably worse. So if you have left it for your family, know that, well, don't justify by saying I am living Dahisha. Say that, well, Lord, attachment is there. No, not you. I am saying generally.
The question is like different. So it says, Ma kasya swidhanam, who is wealth? Now the counter to this would be, like, if I have wealth, I can put it to good use.
Yes, but it belongs to the divine. It is not rituals or even dharma as I understand it. It belongs to Ishavasyam idam sarvam. See, the sloka is knit. The first 1/4 is the most important part. Yes. It's again when you take the next one, Kurvan Neveha Karmani. Now you have to work. Now why? Because you have to take the first sloka into consideration. Otherwise, they get disconnected. That I'll keep working for 100 years. That's not what he's saying. He's saying because everything derives from this 1/4 of the sloka. Isha Vasyam Idam Sarva. If all this is for the Lord, so the wealth that is with me, I am a custodian. So, Grida, I want more, that's where the problem comes. But what is with me, I should use it divinely. Maybe my son is a deserving son or my daughter is would engage and give it to them. Of course, there are certain things which are supposed to be as Laukic duties. Of course, one should do it. One can't like wife or husband. Yes, one leaves for that. But when you are alive, use it with whatever divine purpose that you can conceive of. Now, that's where we should leave it at. What that purpose is, each one must figure it out. I personally feel the best divine purpose is to awaken people to the greater reality. So that would be the highest. But there are different people who, some people give it for a ritual, some do it for, their own deities, whatever it is. So divine purpose. My understanding is to manifest perfection. If you use the wealth to make your house, within the house, make it very beautiful, artistic and tasteful. It's very much a divine purpose. You have the wealth, your house is to become a temple. So you can't keep the temple unclean. So when you make it beautiful, it is a divine purpose. So it depends on how you look at it. But if you want to, coveting is again an inner movement. So Grida is Grida. Possess.
Like a hawk.
Hawk is still okay. Vulture. You are eyeing on somebody else. My parent died. Oh, how much they have left for me. If they didn't leave for you, it's okay. There should be no such. They left it for everybody. You gave them all the love. Doesn't matter. Divine will give you what he has to give you. My in-laws didn't give me all this. That's okay. This is not relevant. What I need for the work, or for myself, because sustenance of your worldly life is part of the work. Because if you don't have a physical body itself, then so divine will provide. So a sadhak lives in that attitude. He's not coveting or eyeing. Somebody else is having a big bungalow, a big this thing. No, that he's not. So that's how it should be. Very simple, very direct. Because everything belongs to the Isha. It doesn't belong to my ritualistic idea, understanding. So it requires a yoga actually.
When I was reading through this, Shankara has a commentary and then Sri Aurobindo has moved away from
it. Yes, even the word meaning. Even the word meaning, yes, in places Sanskrit. Because Sri Aurobindo received a nirukta from Sri Krishna. That's how he could decode the Vedas. Now Sri Aurobindo and even his followers don't much talk about it because propaganda, all this spirit is not there. But essentially, his commentary definitely exceeds Shankara's. Also, if you see the life. So, Sri Aurobindo never took sannyas. Even here, he has not taken sannyas. At no point, he has taken sannyas. He was engaged in different kind of activity. He was living in the world. The whole ashram is his big family. His own wife, he asked her to come and join. It's a different thing, that divine plan. She died on the way. So Sri Aurobindo never took sannyas. So he is much more, in a way, authorized to speak of the Isha Upanishad, even otherwise. And his experiences, of course, are there. So that's how I look at it. Yes, Shankaracharya's bhash is there. Yes. But he had to ultimately, even Kurvan Neve Karmani, that it's only till you are
100 years.
Till you are realizing. And that also later on becomes rituals. Other activities are out of it. So that's an interpretation, I would say. And those who want to believe and follow, it's fine. But yes, that's not consistent with divine life upon world. Yes.
you want to take these, or we should, because you might have some.
Which ones are these?
Neva Karmani, and there is Asurya Naam Telo.
We can quickly touch it, because we have already touched the base.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So basically, it is saying by truly doing our work and duties in this life, live for 100 years. Hmm. There is no other way for you. Your actions will stick.
Yes.
To you and cause negative consequences. So I'll try to consolidate all these three questions. All these questions. Yes. One. So number one, why does the verse tell us to want to live long? Isn't a long life another desire attached to the body? Question number one. The verse suggests that there is only one way to act without creating negative consequences. In today's complex world, with so many different situations and ethical dilemmas, can there be just one simple method? What might that one way look like? Then the verse asserts, there is no other way than this. What makes this specific combination the only path of freedom? Now, if it says there is only this is the one way, then what are other spiritual paths inherently?
Yes, taught? Yes.
And then, when undertaking a task at work or at home, how can we measure the extent to which our focus is in the process versus and how does a special way look like?
Yeah, very simple. See, if you look at the bondage, so the traditional understanding is bondage comes from karma. But Sri Krishna also says that he is the origin of karma. He is the origin of all energy. So that way the divine has bound himself. It's a paradoxical thing. So bondage is, if bondage is due to karma, karma bandhana, then it is also said that by purushartha, you can undo that karma. So karma becomes the source of bondage and karma becomes the means of liberation. And the reason is this, that why do we do karma? Because I am engaged ordinarily because of ego and desire. Desire is the great impeller. There are other reasons also of karma. It could be ambition. It could be even an intellectual idealism, whatever it is. Not stark desire as we understand it. But karma is impelled by these motives which are largely born from the ego and ignorance. So it bounds us. It bounds us to the consequences. Why doesn't karma bound an animal? Why don't we hear of karma law applying to animal? Because he is acting in spontaneous instinct. He is not having those movements. He is, if he feels hunger, he will eat. He doesn't feel hungry, he is not eating. He is not accumulating. So animals are not bound by that. But with human beings, conscious choices come. So when we make conscious choices of karma, which includes inaction, is a choice of,
yes, not acting.
So it has its consequences. That's how human beings learn and grow. So this we understand, that karma has as a follow-up consequence. So we are bound in a chain. But what does the Gita say? The karma itself will liberate you. So how does karma liberate you? So bondage is not the outer action, but your inner state of ego and desire. Meaning thereby, if I stop doing the karma outwardly, and I take a sannyas outwardly, and I am just doing my bharan poshan, it's all right as long as nobody discovers me. The moment somebody discovers me, gives me a mobile phone, I know of people in sannyas ashram whom somebody gifted mobile, now they want the latest mobile. Literally saying that I want the latest mobile. Shuru ho gaya na wo aapka to, because the roots of karma are in. The seeds of sin are in the rajasic egoism. And the bondage is in the gunas. So the whole question that when you are free from the guna, can you act in the world? That's exactly what is being told to us, that yes, you can act in the world. Now when you are acting in the world, first of all, karma done with the right attitude, that is nishkam karma, equanimity, dedication to the divine, not for your ego and desire, then this karma will undo the knots. You will become a liberated person inside. You are a jivan mukta. You are nistray gunya. Then what do? Should you be free? No, still you continue doing karma. Now the karma is to manifest the divine will upon earth. So this 100 years is that, why 100 years is fullness. It's not technically 100. It's the fullness of life, fullness of the curve in which we have entered. So 100 years could be 70 years, 120 years.
Means a long life.
Long life, fullness. Actually, 100 always indicates a fullness.
Okay.
So where in every sphere of life that you have taken up, you have given your best. This best is not the ego best, but the divine best. So whatever is your divine best, maybe your sudharma, that's the minimum. Or if you are a yogi, that yoga best you are giving or letting it flow. You are no more a giver because you know the divine is the doer. So you are inwardly always free, and such a person should live why 100, 300 years, because he is such an asset to the world. So 100 years is not the 100 but fullness. To that extent, till the divine will keeps him, he should live rather than run away from that. So this is the whole idea. And if you refrain from action, it's an illusion that you are free. See a Sadhu Baba sitting in some place. I'm not talking of one odd person. They are genuine people, genuinely genuine. But I'm talking of the majority. He's not interacting with the world. Now one person goes and, you know, tells him something or annoys him. See how the anger and everything will rise. So the roots are inside. You have only not expressed, stopped expressing it. So the roots will go if you are engaged in karma. You are discovering, oh, this is because of my desired self. I have to make sure that it's not under desire I act. So that's why it's a prelude or anticipation of the yoga of the Gita. That's what he is bringing up. Action is the bondage. Action is gives you the road to freedom. And when you are free through action, then yet you can continue to act till the fullness of God's urge in you is exhausted. When it is exhausted, he will take you back, like Arjun's case. After all, Shri Krishna himself chooses to depart because the fullness is over. He has finished all his works for which he had come. So here 100 implies the purpose for a life that has been planted in a human being.
And the verse says there is no other way than this.
Yes, because exactly, because if you withdraw from life, the whole Isha Upanishad is about that. If you withdraw from life, you are just fooling yourself and fooling everybody. You think that you are having some experience. You have genuine experiences also. But you think you are a free person. No, come out into the world, see the tests and see what happens to sannyasis. It's tangible.
It's making a very bold statement.
Very bold, very bold. Because you see what happens to the life of sannyasis. They become so egoistic, they become so much attached, and they give all kinds of justifications. Because precisely because you have followed, that's why I have always felt that one of the reasons why I fell for Sri Aurobindo and fell for Shri Krishna earlier. Because, you know, these are, and again I say Rama. So that thing is that when people say, इन्होंने हिमालय में जाके 10 साल 15 साल तपस्या की थी. When people say that, it turns me away. I said, then he's not fit to teach me. I am in the world. Majority of people are in the world. He has not faced the world. He went there, took Diksha in Himalaya, discovered something, came back. Now he is telling us how to be with the wife, how to be with the child. You are not married. You don't have a child. How do you understand the problems of mankind? Rama married, Krishna married, mother married.
For his last question, he had to...
Yes, to take a human, exactly.
Yes.
That famous Mandan Mishra wife. Exactly. So you are Ube Bharti. So you are basically, you don't, and in that answer, I am sorry to say, but my understanding is he didn't give the right answer, a full answer. And that's why Ube Bharti, and there's a whole epilogue to that. But theek hai, I agreed. He knew something about what, you know, because he doesn't know what a true yogi can be. Even engaging in the world, he has given, as he understood in the king's body, through the king's body, what the secret is, what its truth is. But to live our great, that's why Rama and Krishna, and now Sri Aurobindo and the mother, perfect examples, having even a child. So, wo leaders, I'm not denying.
But isn't it saying that other spiritual paths are inherently flawed? No, so diversity.
Flawed, yes. Nahin, diversity hai, flawed hai. ये नहीं कहा जा रहा कि ये सुपीरियर है, ये भी नहीं, वी आर नॉट सेइंग दैट.
व्हेन इट इज सेइंग दैट दिस इज द ओनली वे, मतलब अगर यही सब वे चीज है तो मतलब बाकी क्या सब फेक है?
नहीं, ही इज सेइंग कि यू कैन नॉट गेट द कंप्लीट लिबरेशन, लेट मी पुट इट लाइक दैट. फेक नहीं कह रहा है, कह रहा है कि सी ईशा हैज सेट फॉर इटसेल्फ द हाईएस्ट स्टैंडर्ड. सो व्हाट इट इज सेइंग दैट, वेल यू विल गेट योर पार्शियल ग्लिम्पसेस लिबरेशन, फाइन, बट द पाथ दैट हैज बीन गिवन टू मैन.
स्वामी विवेकानंद हैज सेड दैट ओशन इज अ डेस्टिनेशन, देयर आर मल्टीपल रिवर्स.
That's one part.
Saying, that, no, this is the only river.
Because the destination is not rushing and merging in the ocean. See the original premise. Destination is to let the ocean come here and become vessels and vehicle of that ocean. So, short of it, Isha Upanishad doesn't consider it. Let me give an example. A person who does MBBS, he's a doctor, he can prescribe. He can prescribe a cardiac medicine. But now imagine a person who does MD medicine. He can prescribe cardiac medicines. But a person who does DM in cardiology. Now, so technically, it's not that MBBS is nothing. But if you talk about the cardiac medicine as a yardstick, you must arrive at the pinnacle. So same with the Isha, that Isha says if you have not reconciled world and God and the opposites, you cannot say that you have arrived at the fullness. That's the 100 years means. And according to the Isha, this is what creation is meant to be. It is implicit within it, not that it says in so many words. And if you have not arrived at that fullness, its goal is not moksha. Moksha is a step, but fullness of life. So fullness of life, this is the path. If you want to cut away, perfectly fine. If you want to merge in the ocean, valid. It's not invalid. But if you want fullness, then this is the path Isha is showing, which the Gita also shows in a way.
So for day-to-day life, how should we apply this in our day-to-day life, this learning from this? Because Nishkam Karma is like too high.
No. That's the simplest practice, Nishkam Karma.
No, if I drive, I drive because I enjoy driving.
That's not Nishkam Karma. That's fine. Nishkam Karma means when I am driving to earn my daily bread. Okay, that's to the workplace. Enjoying driving, having the delight of existence is not Sakam. You are in that state of inner joy which is coming from every pore. That's not the Kam Bhav is where you are desiring or coveting something external. That's what Kam is. So Kam is here. You want to get promotion, you want more money, you are driving. One can drive for the joy of serving. Like I am driving here in ashram, people drive. But the objective is serving the mother. I am saying that should be the objective, not that whether people have or not. So when you do that, and on the way when you are driving, there is something very beautiful. There is a beautiful weather. And you experience that as something very beautiful. Nothing wrong in that. But if the weather is hot and you say, oh my God, I have to go and do this, then there is a problem. So basically it's that. Karma is a means to serve the divine, if you take it in simple terms.
Last one, we'll quickly finish this. So Asurya Naam Te Loka. This is the layers of the self after death go towards those worlds which are called Asurya and are enveloped in blinding darkness.
Yeah.
So I'll just touch upon the
question.
When self is indestructible, how can it be slayed?
Yes.
If slaying the self leads to darkness after death, what does it look like to slay the self in our lives?
Yes. So basically, you are born with a certain purpose. So it has two meanings. One is the straight meaning. We'll take it from the second sloka. First, second, third. They are running in parallel.
Yes.
So Kurvanneveya Karmani says that 100 years you must want to live. You must live the fullness of life. But with the attitude that Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam is the attitude. Tena taktena bhunjita magrida kasvidana. Then with that state, with that attitude, Kurvan Nevaha Karmani Jiji Visheshatam Sama. So who are the, then Asurya Naam Te Loka. Now who are these people who are slayers of the self, who want to cut short this thread of life? It could be either through a suicide or through any means where you basically don't want that full unfolding which is going to take place, the purpose for which you are born. It's like dying or without fulfilling the main purpose for which you have come into existence. So implicit here is that there is a purpose of existence, and that purpose the Isha unveils over all the 18 slokas. But basically it means that if you have deliberately, willfully, now accidents are a different thing, if you by whatever means finish your life, either by sulking into depression, taking alcohol, or frank suicide, or even running away and joining some place and becoming this Baba, that Baba, becoming a charasi Baba, Bhangedi Baba, because you can't face the life. Then you are a slayer of self because you have not allowed the fullness of this purpose to manifest. Then when you come back with the same difficulty which you had not taken care of. You don't become free. So you go into the worlds of darkness because what was the motive behind it? Extreme egoism. You are afraid of life, out of fear, out of depression. This state which is very dark state. Therefore, what happens? That dark state you carry. You are praying every day, when will God come and take me away? And one day, He takes you away, or whatever, Yama comes and takes you away. Now your fear, you died in a state of fear, in a state of depression, in a state of jugupsa, running away from things, then you are projected, because that's the state, you are projected into worlds of darkness. That's what it means. So, of course, The self with a capital S, let us say, that is indestructible. But what could have been done in three lives has taken you many lives. And we can take the example, classic example is of the Jayavijaya story, where Lord Vishnu tells them that you have three options. This story will actually fit very well here. You have two options. One is you can come back in three lives. The other is you can come back after seven lives. So they choose for the three life. We know the story. So what happens in these three lives? They are slayers of self, constantly opposing the divine plan. Ultimately, the nude spirit comes back, just as it was. So what's the deal? Nothing. Whereas the other life of seven lives is a life of fullness, where you have entered into the cycle of creation to finally fully manifest the divine purpose for which you have entered. So in that sense, they are slayers of self. That way though, frankly, nothing can be destroyed. Not only the self, even matter cannot be destroyed. Yes. So if we take that aspect.
Yes.
But here slayer of self means it's like seed has been put into the soil.
But you did not let it bloom.
Like Christ himself said in one of his stories, New Testament, that people say, you are saying such beautiful thing, but you know, most of the people are not hearing, not caring. He says, I know, but 1,000 seeds I put, somewhere soil is not ready. So it is too porous, too soft, so seed will not sprout. Others are very rocky, so seed will not sprout. Others where it will sprout, but it will get entangled in weeds, again it will not. 1 in 1,000 will sprout and become a tree. That's my reward.
Gita also same.
Yeah.
Manushya naam
sahasre. Exactly. This is the sloka I remembered when I had read this story from the... So basically it's about the fullness of life, which is the aim of the Isha. That's why it is so contemporary. Isha and the Gita remain contemporary throughout. It's about fullness of life. Again, it's not to deny the sannyasi his right to go away. It's not like this is something even lesser. No, we should not say like that. It is his, like in spiritual language, it is called as a weak ego, which cannot bear the world and wants to run away from that. But the other is the mighty and the strong, the noble, who want to engage with life. And they go through the cycles of creation. They put themselves into it, not afraid of it, until there is the fullness. So that's where the distinction lies.
So if ignorance is linked to darkness, what are some practical steps we can take each day to move towards light? If slaying the self also can be living in darkness.
It is worse darkness. It is worse darkness. Yes. Equally going into, as it would say later on, Andham tava prafijanti, there is two kinds of darkness. A darkness where you enter into light but cut off from the world. So, but that is a little later. So, to come out of ignorance to knowledge, one should be a seeker. That means you should know that this framework in which I am operating, whether in my work, in my life, my relationships, my knowledge, all this is limited. Not meaningless, not illusion, but limited. Let's say you are having a relationship. It ends up in anger, quarrel. So, relationship is bad. You want to leave everything and go away. Now, that's not the path. So, path of ignorance to knowledge is you must learn what is the right way to relate. So, people believe there is no right way because ultimately it's all ignorance. So, leave it and go to knowledge. But since God is in the world, there has to be a way. How does the divine deal with the world? So, one has to discover that. Which means, first you have to, of course, outwardly turn away from your ignorant way of dealing with the world. Inwardly you have to turn away, not outwardly. You have to reorient, discover the divine truth. Then you have to once again engage with the world, but engage with it now with the true knowledge. And that's why Gita speaks of the divine immanent in every aspect of creation. When you see Vasuki, I am the serpent, that's where the dhyuta question comes in. You have to see that it's the same power. So, sunlight you can use, or let's say a sharp knife you can use to cut vegetable, you can use in self-defense, you can murder somebody. So that way you begin to reorient. So the same power in us is distorted by the ego. And that's what ignorance is. To be free of the ego, but with the same life. Now you are using everything rightly for its ordained divine object. That's what divine purpose. That's what dharma is ultimately. That everything is consistent with its divine purpose. And then the method will be very different, like calling God's name, all that. But fundamental, that seeking.
And Manushyanam Sahasresu, that slogan itself, it says that only a handful can know the truth.
Yeah.
So what about the rest? Do they all belong to hell?
No. They are on the path. We are fortunately not Semitics. We believe that everybody is progressing. What he said is Manushyanam Sahasrenu is that if you do a cross-sectional, not a longitudinal state. So cross-sectionally at any given point of time, you will see one among thousands. Which is not bad, by the way, Sahasrenu, if you take. That would make quite a big number.
Yes.
But what about the others? They are progressing. So longitudinally way, everybody is moving toward the divine.
Yes.
But people are in different stages of evolution. It's like an infant. Will he never grow into adult? He will grow into adult. But an adult is an adult, an infant is an infant. So at any given point of time, there are certain number of adults. What about the infants? They are growing towards adulthood. That's how we have to look at it.
And what exactly is self-slaying mean here? In this world?
Self-slaying, the possibilities that were to emerge. That's the only thing you can slay. That you were born with a purpose. That purpose one abandoned. Like what is slaying the seed? Destroying the seed is the possibilities that are there in the seed. Seed hai. Andar mein ab kuch nahi hoga.
By indulging in ego, by indulging in desires.
They are the ways. We don't slay the self like that because ego and desires are path where you subordinate rajasic ego into sattvic ego. But if all one's life, one has lived only under ambition, spell of ambition, then yes, you can say that he dies in a state of depression and darkness, because this is an extreme statement. Most people in life are slowly progressing. That's why it's called as old age wisdom.
And how do we discriminate between this slaying of self versus healthy self-interest?
So that's where we talk about the more sattvic or a more rational, reasonable life where, as they say, live and let live, you allow others also to prosper. But when the ego becomes very inordinately ambitious, you are pushing others, elbowing down, and eventually you end up in a state of extreme darkness. I know people, I know even military generals who, you know, that's a very big post, but the last post from major general to lieutenant general, which in the medical corps, that's the highest. He didn't get, he jumped from a sixth floor and died, committed suicide. So that is because you lived life for that ambition. So this is the problem with ambition, that at some point it ends up backlashes. It depresses
you. That is how the world rewards, no external achievement. And external
it's a sad thing. That's why the world is so tragic.
And so, in the West, so, if you are not ambitious,
exactly,
that is looked down upon.
So that's why the world is so tragic. You cannot continue to say that I'll live this kind of life and continue to be inwardly happy. You are not. That's why you see partying culture. That's why you see pornography. That's why the drugs. Why? Because you are unhappy. If somebody was happy, why would he need all these things?
Yes.
So that's why they are unhappy. And this line, if Japan, you see what has happened after it took to Western culture. Such a beautiful country. But you lose contact with your own soul. That's what you may say, slaying the self. Lose contact with their own deeper truth, your purpose. And if nations do it, nations demolish. Mayan civilization, Trojan War, Lanka. India has maintained a continuity of civilization only because as a nation, the soul was never slain. Always there were people who kept it alive. Otherwise, you would have gone the way of Atlantis. Pata bhi nahi chalta, kahan khatam ho gaya. So that's what it means.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.